Not long ago, in the United States, we had many hurricanes. And it's interesting how we all watched to see what the warnings were. And Rose and I, we were scheduled actually to hold meetings in Savannah, Georgia. And I don't know if you followed the weather closely enough, but we were actually scheduled the very day that they evacuated Savannah. And so we would be looking at the map to see what was going on and the weather forecast, the warnings. And we discovered that people were being evacuated, and I told Rose, this doesn't make any sense. Everyone else will be leaving Georgia. We'll be the only ones driving down the other lane. It just makes no sense. So I talked to the pastor and said, are you sure? And he said, actually, I'm not sure at all. And so we did choose to delay. We haven't been there yet. I don't know if we'll get there. The pastor by now has been moved actually to another church. But we were to have been there, but we were warned that we shouldn't go. And I'm so grateful that we were warned and we took the warning seriously. When you open up a bottle of medicine, you know, before you do, there's often a long list of warnings that you read. Sometimes you don't know what to believe. If you take everything they say seriously, maybe you wouldn't. I'm sure you all read about in Hawaii recently, someone hit a warning that there was a missile coming. And so our lives are full of warnings. They're part of regular life. Some are true, some are not so true. And sometimes people spread warnings and alarms just because they enjoy causing mischief. I remember that before an election, it goes back a few years, people were busily telling others that the People's Army of China had already come into the state of Washington and that they were going to be taking over the property of people. And another rumor was that if you were out driving, there would be trucks of certain colors, and if a certain vehicle came your way and you were arrested, you'd be hauled off to some kind of detention center. People didn't know what to think, and still today, sometimes we don't know what to think. Well, the Bible is also full of warnings. And in the next couple of sessions that I'm here with you, I want to talk about some of those warnings. For example, in some of these you are acquainted with, God warned Noah ahead of time of the coming flood. If you want to, let's just turn to a few verses as we go. I don't want to make assumptions that everyone has read all of these verses. Hebrews chapter 11, verse 7. We won't be able to look up all of the verses. But Hebrews 11, verse 7, it says, by faith Noah, being divinely warned, okay, of things not yet seen, moved with godly fear, prepared an ark for the saving of his household, by which he condemned the world and became heir of the righteousness which is accorded according to faith. It says, by faith, Noah, being divinely warned of things not yet seen. In his day, they had never seen any rain come out of the sky. They had never, heard about floods. They knew of water, they knew of rivers, they knew creeks, but no one had ever heard of that amount of water. And yet he was divinely warned, and it says there in verse 7, moved with godly fear, in other words, he was a godly man, prepared an ark for the saving of his household, and the very building of that ark condemned the people of his day. And he became an heir of the righteousness which is according to faith. Now, when Noah was warned, for him, saving faith was to build the ark. He would be God's messenger, and people needed to respond to that message. Turn, if you would, now to the book of Genesis, Genesis chapter 18. Genesis chapter 18, verse 17. It says there, and the Lord said, shall I hide from Abraham what I am doing? Since Abraham shall surely become a great and mighty nation, and all the nations of the earth shall be blessed in him. For I have known him in order that he may command his children and his household after him, that they keep the way of the Lord to do righteousness and justice, that the Lord may bring to Abraham what he has spoken to him. God was about to bring destruction to Sodom and Gomorrah, and God wants to warn the people of Sodom and Gomorrah. He wants to give warning of what is going on. And so he decides first to go to Abraham. Now, Abraham doesn't go home to his wife right away and say, I've got to run and head off to Sodom. Apparently, he is known so that he can literally intercede on behalf of the people of Sodom. Did you hear me? So he could talk to God about the situation of what was going on. And so, where for Noah, he was told to build an ark. For Abraham, he was told to pray. He was told to intercede. He had that conversation with God, and in my thinking, at least for the purposes that we're discussing this this weekend, his conversation was a prayer. And it was a discussion of, God, how can you do this? You know, if there's so many people, and he was negotiating with God. And I believe when we intercede for God, if you read, you know, about the stories of Moses praying and other people, you find that there was truly this interchange between God and those people. Then you go to Genesis chapter 19, just a few pages over, to the story of Lot, and you find in verses 12 to 14 that messengers come to him. It says, then the men said to Lot, have you seen anyone else, your son-in-law, your sons, your daughters, and whomever you have in the city? Take them out of this place, for we will destroy this place, because the outcry against them has grown great before the face of the Lord, and the Lord has sent us to destroy it. So Lot went out and spoke to his sons-in-law who had married his daughters and said, get up, get out of this place, for the Lord will destroy this city. But to his sons-in-law, he seemed to be joking. Now, when we read the book of Job, we see, the book of Jude, we see that Lot is considered a righteous man. And yet, we find that he's living right in Sodom and Gomorrah. That his children have become a part of that environment. And when he goes with perhaps the most important statement of his life, instead of taking him seriously, they think that he's joking. And so there we see that, that when judgment messages come, there's something about our credibility and our lifestyle that causes people to accept or reject what we're saying. This past Sabbath, I was speaking about Naaman, or I don't know if it was this past Sabbath, but recently I was speaking about Naaman. And I talked about the fact that this young woman, this young maid who'd been dragged out of Israel as a slave, had such credibility that when Naaman was told there's someone that can heal you, he went to the king and he left with gold and silver and changes of clothing, because there was such loyalty and such fidelity, such godliness about her life. But when Lot comes, a righteous man, apparently vexed with what was going on in Sodom, goes to his own children, as far as they're concerned, are you kidding? Are you kidding? And sadly, Lot, who perhaps had thought that he was going to be helping his family by going to live close, he ends up losing some daughters and loses his wife. Only two children make it. It's a very sad thing. Loses children out of the deal. Then if you would, look at, well, I will just tell you about some of these, so we won't take too much time. Pharaoh had a dream of that God was going to do something, or something was going to go on, and so Joseph is called, and he shares with Joseph about the dream, and Joseph is able to tell him, this is what's going to happen. There's going to be 7 years of plenty and then 7 years of famine, right? And gives him instructions, and as a result of that, Pharaoh does what he's told, and his people, his country, has averted a great disaster. Okay? God was warning Pharaoh ahead of time what was going to be going on. Later, there's another Pharaoh that doesn't know Joseph, and that Pharaoh is stubborn, doesn't want to allow his people to go, and he's warned there's going to be plagues. These are going to be the consequences. But he doesn't choose to listen, and so he suffers consequences. Later, if you look at Exodus chapter 12, we can turn there. Exodus chapter 12, verse 23. Exodus chapter 12, verse 23. It says there, starting in verse 22, this is the instructions being given, and you shall take a bunch of hyssop, dip it in the blood that is in the basin, and strike the lintel and the two doorposts with the blood that is in the basin, and none of you shall go out of the door of his house until morning. For the Lord will pass through to strike the Egyptians, and when he sees the blood on the lintel and on the two doorposts, the Lord will pass over the door and not allow the destroyer to come into your houses to strike you. Okay? They were warned. They were warned that you need to put this blood on your doorpost, because there's going to be a destroying angel coming through, and if the angel doesn't see that blood, the firstborn is going to be dying. Okay, the Lord will come through, and will destroy. Now, these messages that I've already discussed, When Noah was warned of a flood that was coming, 100% of the people who ignored the warning lost their lives. Would you agree? 100%. When Lot was warned of the destruction of Sodom, only those who left when they were told to leave survived. When Pharaoh had the dream, there truly were the 7 years of plenty and the 7 years that were famine years, and because of that, his country was saved. When the children of Israel were told to be sure and put the blood on the lintel, because otherwise there's going to be terrible consequences, 100% of the people that obeyed were protected, and 100% of the people that ignored faced those consequences. Okay? I'm not going to go into detail the story because we'll discuss it later, but when you read the book of Jeremiah, you discover a group of people who are wandering away from God. And God sends message after message after message telling them that your safety is in surrendering to Babylon. They didn't want to do that. I think they were afraid. God knew something that they didn't know, and that was that God had already sent Daniel ahead of time to prepare the way so that they would be safe in Babylon. I don't know if you've ever thought of that, but Daniel was already there, and they had nothing to worry about. Anyway, and so they were warned time after time that they were to surrender to Babylon, but they didn't want to. And God told them, if you surrender, you know, and do what you're told, no one will lose their lives. Your temple and your city will not be destroyed, but because they chose to ignore God, their people were killed, their city was destroyed, the temple was destroyed, and many were taken captives. All of it was unnecessary. Now, this isn't heavy, deep theology. You don't need to go to the seminary to get a degree to understand this. You know, the point of the matter is that when God gives a serious message, we need to take it seriously. Would you agree? Absolutely. When Jesus warned of the coming destruction of the temple and said there won't be one stone left on top of another, he was serious, right? And when he told them, when you see these things spoken of, you know, and warned them of the coming Roman armies, he not only told them what was going to happen, but he told them how to escape. And because of that, not a Christian lost his or her life. Now, the books of Daniel and the book of Revelation that are contained in this Bible, you have it as well, are God's warnings to us in our day as to what is going to happen and what we need to do to be safe. But my question for you is, what are we doing to take advantage of those messages? That's why in praying about this time with all of you, I felt burdened that we should talk a little bit about what it means to live in times of judgment. Okay? Now, I want us to turn to Matthew chapter 24. Matthew chapter 24. I want to discuss a little bit Noah this evening, and we'll get there shortly. But here is a lengthy warning given by Jesus. Starts in verse 29. Matthew chapter 24, verse 29. It says there, immediately after the tribulation of those days, the sun will be darkened and the moon will not give its light. The stars will fall from heaven and the powers of the heavens will be shaken. Then the sign of the Son of Man will appear in heaven, and then all the tribes of the earth will mourn, and they will see the Son of Man coming in the clouds of heaven with power and great glory, and he will send his angels with a great sound of a trumpet, and they will gather together his elect from the four winds from one end of heaven to another. Okay? So there's the warning. There's the warning. Things are going to happen. They're going to be cataclysmic in nature, and they will follow certain signs. And then verse 32, he gives a bit of an application. Now learn this parable from the fig tree. When its branch has already become tender and put forth fruit, you know that summer is near. So you also, when you see all these things, know that it is near at the door. Assuredly, I say to you, this generation will by no means pass away till all these things take place. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will by no means pass away. So Jesus said, these are the signs. And by the way, when you see the fig tree and you see certain things happening, know know for sure that certain things are about to take place. Verse 36, but of that day and hour no one knows, not even the angels of heaven, but my Father only. But as the days of Noah were, so also will the coming of the Son of Man be. For as in the days before the flood, they were eating and drinking and marrying and giving in marriage until the day that Noah entered the ark, and did not know until the flood came and took them all away, so also will be the coming of the Son of Man be. Okay? So here we see that they're warned that we don't know the time, but it will be coming. Now there's some significance here, because when we study about Noah, we're going to learn about the fact that he was told to preach, and he continued preaching for 120 years. To the people that heard the message, how were they to respond? Okay? This preaching was going to be going on. It would be going on for 120 years. And they were told that just as in the days of Noah, they were eating and drinking, giving in marriage, they were not thinking about what was going on. They had basically ignored and, in fact, were making fun of him. So they did that until the flood came and took them, what? All away. Everyone was affected. They were all taken away. And then it ends, then two men will be in the field. One will be taken and the other left. Excuse me. Two women will be grinding at the mill. One will be taken and the other left. Watch, therefore, for you do not know what hour your Lord is coming. But know this, that if the master of the house had known what hour the thief would come, he would have watched and not allowed his house to be broken into. Therefore, you also be ready, for the Son of Man is coming in an hour you do not expect. And so the last aspect we find in this warning is, not only is something coming, you don't know the hour, and be careful, because many will be doing this, you know, this eating and drinking, giving in marriage, just going on with regular life. But when the time comes, there's no time for delay. Okay? It says, when these things happen, one will be taken, one will be left. Watch, therefore, because you don't know the hour. It will become like a thief. And when Jesus spoke of the sign, you know, when they would see it and they would know to flee Jerusalem, he said, don't even go back and get your cloak. There's a sense of urgency about what is being spoken here. And so I ask the question, what are you doing with these warning messages given in the Bible? How seriously do you take them? As I mentioned, only a handful of people took the warning with Noah as serious. Everyone else died. Only Lot, his wife, and two daughters got out of Sodom. Pharaoh ignored, etc. Well, we want to talk about this matter of living in times of judgment. First of all, God loves you. He loves me. He is merciful. He's long-suffering. He is just. But there are times, because of what is going on, that God decides to bring a major wake-up call, which is what he was doing with Noah, with Sodom and Gomorrah, etc. Prior to doing so, though, he always warns his people. Prior to bringing these cataclysmic events, he always warns his people. In doing so, first he calls or qualifies, and maybe the two of them go together, a messenger. I don't think Noah ever expected that he would be one day called to be the messenger of the coming destruction of the earth. But he was called, and God always has a messenger that he has prepared, and he calls, and God gives that messenger a specific warning message. The messenger communicates the message. Sadly, often this message is unpopular. It is questioned. It is misunderstood. It is rejected, and often the messenger is scorned. But just because the messenger was scorned doesn't mean that the message wasn't true. Would you agree? Often there are false messages. If you read the book of Jeremiah, you find that there's all kinds of false messages being given. Now, there are both positive and negative consequences. To those who listen and respond, they were generally wonderfully saved. I say generally because sometimes there were still consequences. Because of sin, it's not like we go back to the Garden of Eden. We're waiting to go to heaven for that. But those who failed to listen and respond often suffered awful, awful consequences. Well, We want to learn about what it means to live in times of judgment. Now, just imagine. I'm going to assume that you all agree that there was a flood. It's spoken of much in the Bible in terms of Bible affirmation. It's there, and most of us believe it's found in geology as well. But just imagine what it was like when Noah came home for the first time to tell his wife, God told me today that there's a flood and that the entire earth is going to be destroyed and it's going to change my work completely, dear. You must understand, I'm going to be beginning to cut down trees, you know, and I'm going to try and get some other people to help me. And it's going to go on for a long time. Do you think that she might have said to Noah, Noah, are you okay? Are you sure about this? Noah, I've never seen that kind of rain. I've never seen anything like what you're describing. Are you okay? It took a man with a close relationship with God to be able to say that. Noah was called to be that kind of man. If ever there was a quote-unquote crazy man, he might have qualified. How would you have responded had he shared that message with you? And I know that we always kind of hope we would have done right, but had he come to you tonight and said, by the way, I have this message for you, how would you have heard him? Would you have said, Noah, I agree, I want to help? Would you have perhaps gathered the youth group together and said, let's have some building weekends. We need to help Noah. We need to encourage him. How would you have responded? How do you respond to the messages that are for our day? Because you see, how we're responding today actually gives a strong indication of how we would have responded back then. And if that's the case, brothers and sisters, Satan is pretty successful because time has endured longer than we expected. It's not only 120 years, it's more than that, right? And many say, you've been preaching the soon coming of Jesus? Do you really expect us to believe it? So how do you respond? Here's a statement. Not one cloud has fallen upon the church that God is not prepared for. Okay? Nothing has ever happened that God doesn't know anything about. Not one opposing force has risen to counterwork the work of God, but he has not seen it ahead of time. All has taken place as he predicted through his prophets. He's not left his church in darkness, forsaken, but has traced in prophetic declarations everything that would occur, and through his providences, acting in it, the appointed place in the world's history, he has brought about that which his Holy Spirit inspired them to foretell. Brothers and sisters, we ought to be studying this book. What do you think? And saying, Lord, we want to follow what's in this book as well. What was the situation in Noah's day? Look at Genesis chapter 6, verse 2. Genesis chapter 6, verse 2. It says there, starting in verse 1, now it came to pass when men began to multiply on the face of the earth and daughters were born to them, that the sons of God saw that the daughters of men, that they were beautiful, that they took wives for themselves of all whom they chose. I'm reading from Genesis chapter 6, verses 1 and 2. And the Lord said, my spirit shall not strive with men forever. For he is indeed flesh, yet his days shall be 120 years. Then he goes on from there. Verse 5, then the Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every intent of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. That's quite amazing how quickly everything turned to custard, so to speak. Everything turned bad. Beautiful creation. Adam and Eve learn a painful lesson, but yet somehow sin is so strong that eventually it seems like most everyone in the earth has evil in their minds continually. Verse 6, then the Lord was sorry that he had made man on the earth, and he was grieved in his heart. So the Lord said, I will destroy man whom I have created from the face of the earth, both man and beast, creeping thing and birds of the air, for I'm sorry that I've made them. It must take a lot for God to get to that point. A great deal. But then it says, but Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. There was something about Noah's relationship with God. Then in this time of dire extremity, that Noah found favor with God. We know from verse 2 that somehow there were marriages going on that were not along God's order. Apparently, I've read that what it was about was that these, it speaks of these sons of God saw the daughters of men. In other words, godly men were apparently seeing some of the young women who were part of the group that weren't serving God. And they were taking them as wives. Okay? Their thoughts were polluted, filled with violence. And then, as we know from what we just read in Matthew 24, they were eating and drinking and giving marriage. And as we find in the writings of Ellen White, they were filled with amusement and having fun. Okay? So God repented. He decided that he would destroy the earth. But Noah found favor with God. Notice what it says about Noah in verse 9, chapter 6, verse 9. And this is the genealogy of Noah. Noah was a just man, perfect in his generations. He walked with God. I wish the Lord could say about Dan that he was a perfect man in his generation. Wouldn't you like to be able to say that? If it was possible for Noah, and I believe it's only by faith that it's possible, I believe that apparently it is possible to have a walk with God in our day that truly has favor with God, and I believe favor with others as well. And said he was a just man, an honest man, perfect in his generations, and also he walked with God. I don't think it was any easier back then to walk with God than it is today. I believe there was just as much, well, in terms of temptation, difficulties, we know that the minds of men were continually filled with evil, but somehow Noah was able to have this walk with God, and God saw him as a perfect man. Now, verse 13, and God said to Noah, the end of all flesh has come before me, for the earth is filled with violence through them, and behold, I will destroy them with the earth. So the earth was filled with violence. And God said further, make yourself an ark of gopher wood, making rooms in the ark and covered inside and outside with pitch. And this is how you shall make it. The length of the ark shall be 300 cubits, etc. God gave Noah very, very specific instructions. Very specific instructions. Instructions about the dimensions, instructions about, how to make it, the materials, etc. Very, very specific instructions. And Noah was to follow exactly what God had told him. The floodwaters would cover the earth. Everything living would die. Okay? Noah had to do a lot of preparation. But like Joseph, who would come later, Noah was prepared to completely obey God. Aren't we glad that Noah was willing to obey God? Was Noah disappointed in his obedience? No. No. I read a statement from Mrs. White that really touched my heart. She says, those who love God's will find it easy to do God's will. Let me repeat that. Those who love God's will find it easy to do God's will. I believe that when Jesus came and did such a miracle work in our lives that he brought a moral power, a can-do that is found through faith in him that allows us to be men and women that we are not naturally. It's a work of faith from beginning to end. It's not only an imparted righteousness, but it's an imputed righteousness. Not only an imputed righteousness, but an imparted righteousness that changes the way we live. Okay? His entire family was going to be blessed. And I love this statement that comes. It gives other detail. We're not going to go through the detail. But in verse 22, it says, thus Noah did according to all that God commanded him, so he did. According to all that God commanded him, so he did. Now, it's interesting that in Noah's case, God spoke directly to him, and he did all that God commanded him. I'm fascinated where it uses this word according. If you study the story of Naaman, we're not going to be talking about it while I'm here, but recently in looking at the story of Naaman, I've really been fascinated by that story, because when he goes to the house of Elisha, he's been told to go, he's gone with all kinds of money and clothes and, you know, those kinds of things, at least silver and gold, and he's met by a messenger. And the messenger tells him, you're to go to the Jordan River and you're supposed to dip, what, seven times. He's given very specific instructions, and he gets angry. But he has friends there who encourage him to do what he's been told. He said, you know, he's basically told, you know, if it would have been complicated, you'd be glad to do it. Now, when the messenger comes out, He makes a statement, and it says that Naaman turned in rage, but it's interesting. He says there were three things that he was angry about. Number one, that a messenger was sent. Number two, that he didn't just wave his hand. And three, told him specifically where he was supposed to go and what he was supposed to do. Brothers and sisters, when it comes to the warning messages, we still sometimes get upset with how God does it. Let me repeat that. God sometimes uses messengers, and they give very specific messages that sometimes inconvenience us or change things about our lives. Are you following? You see, there are people who say, if only God would have spoken, I would believe him, I would follow him. And a lot of people say, I'm willing to follow, but not that. Okay? And there's a wonderful statement in the story of Naaman. We're not going to go there, but it says that Naaman did everything according to the word of the man of God. Now listen very carefully. Would Naaman have been healed had he just been told, you need to go dip in a river? No. Would he have been healed had he been told, you need to go to the Jordan River? No. It was because he was given the truth and he obeyed the truth completely that he was healed. And brothers and sisters, God gave a message to Noah, and because Noah followed that message to the letter, many, you know, people had the potential to be saved. His family was saved. They would not have survived the flood had he not been so careful about obeying. There was nothing legalistic about Noah obeying, was there? God knew what he was doing, gave the messages, gave the instruction, and because he obeyed completely, he was helped. As we study about living times of judgment, we're going to discover that God later uses messengers. He doesn't go directly in the same way. And I believe the reason that that is because there's something about a man's pride that wants to be communicated with God instead of through what would appear to be another human being. Brothers and sisters, as I said, our Bibles are full of messages. What are we doing with those messages? What are we doing with those messages? Okay? He obeyed. He built the ark. Now, he preached a message of judgment mingled with mercy, but people scoffed. Look, if you would, in 2 Peter chapter 3, verses 3 and 4. 2 Peter chapter 3. Verses 3 and 4. It says there, it says this, knowing this, first, that scoffers will come in the last days, walking according to their own lusts, saying, where is the promise of his coming? For since the fathers fell asleep, all things continue as they were from the beginning of creation. Okay? For this they willfully forget that by the word of God the heavens were of old and the earth standing out of water in the water. Okay? By which the world that then existed perished, being flooded with water. Okay? They had forgotten. Okay? They had forgotten. They were asking the question in verse 4, where is the promise of his coming? Noah continued preaching for 120 years. It wasn't a popular message at all. You see, great and wise men back then had reminded people that they'd never seen rain come down like that. Soon all regarded Noah's prophecy as a delusion and looked upon him as a fanatic. I'm quoting here from Patriarchs and Prophets. Okay? With all their boasted philosophy, men found too late that their wisdom was foolishness, that the lawgiver is greater than the laws of nature, and that omnipotence is at no loss for means to accomplish his purposes. Okay? Noah was considered a fanatic. He was considered an alarmist. There were no indicators that anything was going to happen. There was no indicator that there was anything true. Over time, some of the people that had believed eventually began to lose their sense of urgency and stopped caring. Eventually, in fact, almost all people were scoffing. But Noah remained obedient from beginning to end. He commenced under the directions of God to construct the ark, an immense boat on dry ground. Multitudes came to listen to him. At first they were convicted, a power attended his words. But some began to jest, and unfortunately the greater part were jesting with them. Well, in doing my study, it was interesting that I was reading about the fact that people joined Noah in his building. For example, and his preaching. Methuselah was one of the people that joined Noah in his preaching. There were other people that believed with him in the construction. But unfortunately, eventually some of those people, as a result of, and I want to just quote this to you, if I can again, those who believed when Noah began to build the ark lost their faith through association with unbelievers who aroused all the old passion for amusement and display. For 120 years, the antediluvians were on probation, free to choose to obey the voice of God and find refuge in the ark, or to refuse. Many chose to disobey and therefore were destroyed. As a result of their association with the people of their time, they were tempted to go back, brothers and sisters, into the lifestyle that they'd enjoyed before as well. And brothers and sisters, I say this with all seriousness, that we live in a world that's pretty toxic to our relationship with Jesus. Did you know that? And just as there was this constant temptation to which many succumbed, in fact, literally only a handful resisted, the same temptation faces us in our day. And so, when we look at the story of Noah, we not only see that there is, you know, the message, the world is going to be destroyed, but also the fact that as people were convicted and came to join him, the tarrying of time, the delay in the flood coming, the 120 years caused many to somewhat forget about that urgency and enjoy their associations that then tempted them to completely forget, and they went back off into that which had taken their attention before. Seriously speaking, brothers and sisters, if we are taking the messages seriously, what are we doing to make sure that we constantly live with an understanding that someday Jesus is coming, that someday people are going to die who do not accept his coming? In fact, as we're going to see tomorrow night when we look at the story of Lot, that our sense of urgency, our single-mindedness to follow Jesus, is going to result in some being lost and some being saved. In our own family members. Did you hear me? So what are we doing, brothers and sisters? What are we doing? As I have been studying this, what I have discovered is that Satan has a plan to so fill our schedules and fill our minds and fill our emotions that we no longer have much interest in the things of God. Did you know that? That we will literally be paralyzed, so busy doing this thing and that thing that we aren't really watching and waiting. So I ask, what is going on? As I mentioned, others joined him in preaching. God granted them 120 years of probation, and during that time preached to them through Methuselah, Noah, and many others of his servants. Many others of his servants. And she makes a statement that there were those who died before the flood who would have been saved, you know, had they lived longer. That's Dan's commentary, because she says there were those who were victorious, that they never lost their interest, they never, you know, lost faith in the message of Noah. We're living in that tarrying time, are we not? Absolutely. Absolutely. So eventually, as we follow the story just a little bit further, going back to Genesis chapter 7, verse 1, okay, God had given instructions, and verse 22, Noah had done everything according to what God had said in Genesis chapter 6. In Genesis chapter 7, it says, "Then the Lord said to Noah, 'Come into the ark, you and all your household, because I've seen that you are righteous before me in this generation.'" So God says, come, you know, and then, you know, there's going to be these animals. Verse 4, For after seven more days, I will cause it to rain in the earth, 40 days and 40 nights, and I will destroy from the face of the earth all living things that I've made. And Noah did according to all that the Lord commanded him. Interesting. God said, now I want you to go into the ark. Okay? You're to go into the ark. And after seven more days, I will cause it to rain. So we can imagine that they go into the ark, and we know that the door of the ark was mysteriously closed. And there they sat for 7 days. To build an ark in his day was beyond imagination. But he did it because God said, I'm going to bring a flood. It was all by faith. And when he went into the ark, it was because he still believed. But once again, there was this delay. 120 years in building, nothing there. And people said, you know, Noah, aren't you a little tired? Look at the sacrifice to your family. And then they get on the ark and nothing happens again. But you see, Noah really did believe God. He really did believe God. And brothers and sisters, you wouldn't be here if you didn't believe God. But we're learning together, you know, for a few sessions, what does it mean to live in times of judgment? I think one of the lessons is believe God. Secondly, obey God. Keep obeying God. Encourage others to believe and obey God as well. Okay? Because later when we learn, and tomorrow night, bring others with you, we want to talk about living in times of judgment in terms of the family. Since I was here, it goes back more than 5 years now, because Rose and I, we've been married just over 5 years now. I have read more than I read all together before that. And I'm not a young person, okay? The more I've read, the more in awe I've been at what I read. Last October, I was in India. And on the way home from India, I began reading. Someone wanted me to read on true education, but I got diverted from that in reading about raising children. And I've read by a bit 120 articles on raising children. And I bet you didn't know this, but in 1911, she's going from church to church in Southern California because God told her to go tell parents how to raise their children. She even makes a statement in one case. She says, I wouldn't be here at my age, and she was 80 then, in her 80s, if God had not told me to come and tell you how to raise your children. And as I've read those articles, I believe I understand why we're losing so many children. Seriously. And I want to talk a little bit about that tomorrow night. And let me just give you a little advance notice. How you live is far more important than what you say. She says, example is more potent than precept. What the children see is what they're going to do. And if mom and dad are kind of torn between two agendas, where God isn't first, or, you know, where the church is criticized, don't be surprised that the kids pick it up. They know exactly what's going on. So I want to look at this matter of what it means to live in times of judgment in terms of the family tomorrow night. Okay? But Noah, he was faithful, he was obedient, and because of that, at least Noah and his family was saved. Okay. As you know, it rained for 40 days and nights. There were unchangeable consequences. Those inside were saved. All those outside died. Did God give fair warning to the people of that day? Absolutely. He gave them a warning that went on for 120 years. Gave them warning after warning after warning after warning. 120 years. And I read about how as he pounded, you know, and nailed that boat together, it was an ongoing warning message to the people of his day. The antediluvians cannot say that God did not give them fair warning that a flood was coming. But they chose to ignore the warning. When Jesus comes, if we're not in heaven, brothers and sisters, not one of us will be able to say we weren't warned. Would you agree? Not one of us will be able to say that. As we're going to learn, today God depends on you and I to be the messenger. Are we really giving the message? Are we giving the message clearly and correctly and completely? Are we giving just the part that we find convenient for our lifestyle? Our subject is a very serious one. Now, I believe in salvation by faith 100%. It's even better than I realized. Oh, she makes amazing statements about what God can do, will do, wants to do if we'll just let Him. But brothers and sisters, we live in a planet that's been taken hostage, and Jesus wants to rescue us from this planet. And He's given us fair warning. Fair warning on how to live, fair warning on how to raise our children, fair warning on to watch and pray. What are we doing with it? Will our neighbor someday come back to us and say, you know, you knew, but you never said anything to me? Will our kids say, why? Well, as we come to a close this evening, I want you just to go home and ask yourself the question, Lord, what am I doing with the warning messages of the Bible? I mean, I don't want to insult you at all. But seriously, what are you doing with the messages? Ask God how it is for you. Ask Him, does your lifestyle show that you're actually looking for a better place? Are you still living for this earth? And if you were to talk with your children, to what degree they would see a harmony between your words and your actions? What I've shared is as much for me as it is for you, okay? We're all in this together. Someday Jesus is going to come, and I think we'll be amazed that we're there, but we'll be there if we've taken the messages seriously.